to start the podcast, can you say a little about the notion of biopolitics and where your work stands in relation to it?
So the term biopolitics comes from Foucault when he's writing about issues around sexuality and nationalism and where those things come together. And in a sense, what Foucault's doing there is kind of reimagining the critique of modernity, or redoing the critique of modernity rather than in terms of capitalism, thinking of a kind of broader political economy that includes economies of bodies and desires and so on, other than just the economy of money. So he describes modern politics as biopolitical, and says that biopolitics is kind of what happens, or modernity is what happens, when life enters the domain of politics. And he says that politics becomes concerned with the pursuit and maximisation of life. So from sort of Marxist theory, we're used to thinking about modern politics as the pursuit of profit. Foucault's saying it's kind of broader than that, it's the pursuit of life. So that's where the term comes from, and it comes from Foucault, but it's been taken up to do some quite specific things in contemporary writing by other people, such as Agamben. And it's been taken up particularly to think about security and security studies. And in that literature, the term's been taken over, rather than thinking so much of it as the pursuit of life, it's more like the power over life. And people think of biopolitics as something like a kind of legitimisation of security and racism. So my own work is coming at it from a bit of a different angle from that, and trying to draw more from Foucault's ideas than these kind of ideas, literatures on security have been drawing from the idea of biopolitics. Basically I'm saying that Foucault's saying something a bit more interesting than some of the recent ideas. I'd say that Foucault argues that biopolitics really is the pursuit of life. It's not like a kind of ideological mask for power, legitimising control, like power just wants to control things. Rather, it's that modernity really does kind of start this process of politics, which is about pursuing life, caring for life, maximising life, taking care. Modernity as the emergent welfare state and all that kind of thing. But that pursuit creates a kind of technical necessity for racism and for security. So it's a critical reading, but it's a critical reading. It's saying modernity, modern politics, involves racism, involves security, involves control. But it's a critical reading that tries to explain where those things come from in terms of why they are appealing, why they are produced, why people would actually want them to be there, and in terms of this idea that politics is pursuing and caring for life, for biological life. So in a sense, it's a more kind of constructivist, empiricist kind of account of biopolitics that's there in Foucault. But also I think he's saying something much more general than the kind of security literature, rather than just saying biopolitics, you know, modern power takes control of life. He's saying something much more general about kind of culture and values and meaning. He's arguing that biological knowledge transforms the way that we experience the world as meaningful, transforms the kind of values we can have. So in a sense, it's almost like a kind of theological transformation or cultural transformation that's really profound. And that's the kind of thing that I'm trying to bring out in my book, is to talk about biopolitics not just as kind of power over life, but rather as a more kind of profound transformation in the structures of experience.
So the positive dimensions which are often overlooked.
Exactly. Trying to draw out the kind of positive, appealing aspects of biopolitics. But that means some people find my work, you know, very weird, because the whole idea of all this stuff, you know, critical sociology, is to be critiquing these things, right? And I think I am still trying to critique biopolitics and to critique biopolitical racism, but in a way that rather than just by saying it's bad, kind of we know it's bad, right? We know racism is bad, we know militarization is bad. But to also say, yeah, but why is it that they work as political discourses and political projects? How have they appealed to people? In the hope that by understanding those appeals, the kind of allures of something like biopolitics, understanding its positivity, actually we can kind of make ourselves, you know, freer from those things.
How has the appeal of biologism traditionally been understood by sociologists? I mean, why has this positive dimension been occluded, do you think?
Well, actually, I think there's two ways of answering that. Just the second question first. Why has it been occluded? Just as a starting point, you say that one of the key things of sociology, and this isn't something special about Foucauldian sociology and talking about biopolitics, this is one of the key aspects of sociology, certainly of the past, you know, kind of 80 years, has been about critiquing biological determinism and critiquing kind of sociobiologism, and putting forward socially constructivist arguments against biological determinism. And that's been a very political project because it's been about challenging biological racism particularly, and also challenging essentialist ideas about gender and sexuality. So this has been kind of key project of sociology, has been to critique biological reason, biological racism. The main way in which that's been done by sociologists is to describe biology as a form of determinism, and to say that it's a type of that biological thought, biological racism, biological essentialism, that these are ways of fixing reality and saying that things can't be changed and can't be different. That biological, if you say something's biological, then supposedly you're saying it's fixed and can't change. And so sociologists have kind of explained the appeal of biologism and biological racism by talking about like the appeal of conservatism. So when you have second wave socially constructivist feminists talking about earlier feminists who were involved with more biological reasoning and that kind of thing, they say, oh, well, these feminists were kind of clinging to the past, clinging to a sense of security and kind of old beliefs about biological determinism and about the fixity of the world. And when you hear, when you read literature on social constructivist critiques of racism, they're all sort of, well, they associate biological racism with conservatism, basically, and that's kind of explaining its appeal. Why sociologists explain the appeal in that way, I think part of the reason there is to do with the politics of sociology. It kind of offers sociology itself, socially constructivist thought, as an answer to problems of sexism, the problems of racism, are answered by sociology because sociology is socially constructivist and, unlike old biological reasoning, is much more enlightened and understands that the world is in transformation and should be in transformation. So there's this kind of political project of sociology to affirm social constructivism, and biological determinism as biological conservative deterministic thought is kind of the other of the sociological project in that way.
So it's critical, but it's locked within these dichotomies of essential versus contingent, nature versus culture.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. It's a critique that draws these dichotomies, and which affirms all the things on one side of that dichotomy. Mm. So it affirms social constructivism as a good thing. It affirms contingency and change as a good thing. If only we can say that the world could change, then it will change for the better, is kind of the assumption. Now, that's actually all massively problematic. If you look at biological reasoning itself, and if you look at actually what, say, feminists who were early 19th century feminists who were actually all into evolutionary theory, what they were actually saying about the world, or if you look at eugenicist reasoning, what these people are actually talking about and actually describing as their beliefs, because eugenicists and people and like feminists who buy into old, you know, supposedly old deterministic forms of biological reasoning, actually these people are progressivists. Actually, they're invested in the idea that the world is in permanent evolution and transformation, and that it should be transformed. They're actually talking about the world as contingent and changing, and about race relations as contingent and changing, and about the nature of gender as contingent and changing. They actually sound a hell of a lot more like socially constructivist sociologists than the caricature that sociologists have drawn of biological determinism,
which is straightforwardly empirically inaccurate.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. It's inaccurate. It's inaccurate as an account of biopolitical discourses, and it's also politically problematic because it implies that there's a much bigger difference between eugenicist reasoning, biological reasoning, and socially constructivist reasoning. So it's implying that sociology is the answer to racism and sexism, when perhaps sociology has been another way of articulating racism and sexism in a kind of slightly different guise, rather than something completely different.
And how do these debates have contemporary relevance? Because there's an obviously political dimension running through the book.
So I think the relevance of the book, and I mean, it's not really... I'm not sure that there's really a politics in the book. I think the book's about how we do critique, and that's kind of fundamentally political, but I'm not... or I shouldn't be, at least, kind of offering an alternative politics, or, you know, an answer to the questions of what is to be done, something like that. But to critique some of the ways that we do critique, and to think about how to do critique differently. So I suppose if there's a key kind of political argument of the book, it's that racism and security politics are not deterministic and aren't conservative ways of seeing the world. They are processual, dynamic ways of seeing the world, which affirm contingency and which are invested in the ideals and pursuit of contingency and change. That means that if we want to critique racism, or particular types of racism, biopolitical racism, then we need to do something other than just say everything's contingent. Everything can change. Now, there's various ways in which that has contemporary relevance. I think perhaps the key way is that it has relevance to thinking about contemporary racism. Although biological racism is less important these days, cultural racism remains immensely important. You can think particularly about Islamophobia. Now, I think that these critiques that Foucault draws our work to of thinking about the nature of racism as processual and as invested in contingency and ideals of transformation is really important for understanding cultural racism as well as for understanding biological racism. And I think it means that when we're trying to confront and critique contemporary instances of like Islamophobia, for example, it's really important to not go down the road that like old sociologists went down in relation to biological racism, and say that how we should do that critique is to say, well, actually Muslims aren't all the same and Muslim culture changes, or differences between people aren't fixed, cultural differences aren't essential and fixed, they can transform and change. I'd argue that we need to do that. There's no fundamental disagreement between that statement and Islamophobia, and we need to find different ways of doing critique. And it's certainly not enough to just be kind of saying, when we're faced with the problem of Islamophobia, to be saying, we sociologists need to affirm how transforming and changing contingent all the cultures in the world are. And I think this has, it's sort of particularly relevant for thinking about how to address the situation of Islamophobia in contemporary feminist thought, for example, which is a kind of progressive mode of thought, a socially constructivist, transforming, contingent mode of thought, but that can enable very virulent articulations of Islamophobia and racism.
Does your objection relate to the tools within the post-structuralist toolbox, as it were, so denaturalising moves, de-essentialising moves, etc.? Or is it to do with the way that those are used, if you see what I mean?
I think my main point in relation to, like, the critique of, you know, biological essentialism, denaturalising moves, as you put it, my main point is that they're not enough.
Mm.
They're a starting point, or they can be a starting point. So they're not enough. We need to be also thinking about the construction of the world differently, not just saying it's constructed, these things are constructed, but saying, well, what actually are the mechanisms and processes and architectures of experience that do that construction, so that you could do that construction. And if you want to do it differently, you know, it's not enough to just say things are constructed, they could be different. You actually have to imagine them differently. Mm. You have to actually think about how processes are connected and construct things and make things differently and make those different modes of production visible.
So a proactive critique almost.
Yeah. A constructive rather than simply a deconstructive mode of critique. Recently, not in the book, but kind of the work that I'm now moving towards after the book is thinking about is working with various people who are interested in participation and participatory methods, and trying to think within that about how we actually don't just like deconstruct nasty things like the idea of objectivity and objective reason as a kind of like the idea of nature, but actually how we construct different ideas of objectivity or different experiences of objectivity, or what the role of kind of ontology and absolutes and things like that is in a creative pluralist politics. So I think it's sort of saying that we need to not just be deconstructing on the ontological, but also constructing new ontologies. So that's one thing, and that stuff's all kind of, you know, the most difficult stuff, because it's actually trying to say, well, we need to do something different, and I'm just saying we need to do something different, you know, then you need to actually go and do it. But the other thing I'm saying, or my problem in relation to the post-structuralist critique or the denaturalising moves, is the way in which they themselves become a fetish, the way in which just deconstruction itself or contingency itself, social constructivism itself, becomes fetishized in the sociological imagination and sociological pursuit. I don't know if fetishized is the right word, but it becomes something that we think if we're doing that, we're doing the right thing.
But there's often a kind of self-marginalization that can stem from that, because it's not really offering very much actively.
Yeah, I think that's true. But also, actually, I don't think social constructivism is at all marginal in the contemporary world. I think that's the norm, is you know, biologists are social constructivists these days, yeah. Everybody, and the racists are social constructivists, that's for sure. Social constructivism is more like the dominant discourse. And if all we do is to kind of get enamoured with our own ability to do it extremely well, to deconstruct things extremely well and show how everything's constructed, then we can be doing that and actually be, at best, not critiquing, perhaps possibly affirming and supporting the very frames of reason that are used in Islamophobic discourse, in the contemporary sexist discourses, the very things that we should be opposing, we might find that we're ignoring or actually enhancing.
Is there almost the dimension of sociologists sometimes fighting battles that have already passed, that have not necessarily been won or lost, but that what's at stake has changed?
Yeah, that's a really nice thought. David Skinner's got a lovely paper called Sociology and Groundhog, I can't remember exactly the title, but it's like Groundhog Day as sociology and the critique of race, where I think he's making exactly that argument, saying that sociologists keep on, anti-racist sociology keeps on critiquing biological racism, and the issues moved on 60
anymore.
Years ago
yeah.
From yeah, exactly, from where's at stake. I think that's a good point. But I also think we have to ask what's going on there. Because if people are making these critiques and doing these critiques, and actually the stakes of critique seems to have changed, then what else is going on? What political purpose might that critique be serving? What kind of forms of self-justification or obfuscation are going on when we're critiquing a kind of straw man?
Is that a purpose you see as residing outside the academy or within it or both?
Well, I suppose I think about the world in terms of discourses, and as discourses as things that the academy has a role, a powerful role sometimes, and less so other times, in constructing and shaping. I think that that social constructivism as a discourse is enormously powerful, and that academic writings and thoughts and arguments about social constructivism that have been taking place over the last sort of, you know, 60, 70 years have fed into and shaped a broader shift in kind of discourses. So I guess I think it's that, that it's not a clear distinction between what's the academy and what's outside the academy, but rather our discourses and categories and arguments, you know, fly around all over the place.
That was fascinating. Thanks very much.